This is the Leader's Guide for Hebrews, Lesson 21 and 22. I'm starting on page 103. This is a long lesson, so keep that in mind as you are working through it. We will first get a preview of the sanctuary, sacrifices, and covenants. And you could see on page 103 that there is an illustration of this these chapters, Hebrews 8 through 10, being like a symphony in three movements where sanctuary, sacrifice, and covenant are the three themes. So we have the first layer of discussion with these three topics, and then another layer of discussion with these three topics, then one more layer of discussion. So at the bottom of page 103, I've said we're going to engage in a brief preview. Hebrews 8 through 10, 18 are rich, they're meaty, this is the meat of what the pastor writing to the Hebrews has been eager to explain. So where we've been so far has been preparation. On page 104, this is the overview of this big chunk, this passage, Hebrews 8 through 10, 18. But we're going to go over it briefly and just notice what has been said about the sanctuary, the sacrifice, and the covenant in each of these three sections. So first of all, the sanctuary, Hebrews 8:2, refers to Jesus, who is our high priest, being a minister of the sanctuary. And he's a minister of the true tabernacle erected by the Lord. So basically what I've done is I've just noted what the verse says. And that's helping me get in my mind around and observe these three different topics that are going to be covered. The sacrifice is noted in Hebrews 8:3. This high priest, Jesus, offers gifts and sacrifices. Other high priests originally were appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices, and so this author to the Hebrews is telling us that Jesus also is required to offer a gift and sacrifice. The covenant, Hebrews 8, 7 and 8, the first covenant was not faultless. The fault was with the people, and so God said he would make a new covenant. And that sounds kind of strange when I'm saying it, but I'll just keep it simple and just make the comments, and we're going to get into that further, but it's bringing a mention of the covenant to our attention. So the first covenant, there was a problem with the first covenant because there was a problem with the people. That's what that whole faultless thing means. And because of that problem, God said he would make a new covenant. In the second section, Hebrews 9, 1 through 22, the sanctuary is mentioned in Hebrews 9, 8 and 9. The way into the holiest of all, or the holy of holies, in the tabernacle, the way into the presence of God was not available when that first tabernacle stood in the wilderness. And that tabernacle was symbolic for the present time, the time in the wilderness, not our present time, even though looking back, it's symbolic to us now, but it was symbolic at that time for those people. And it was showing that sacrifices could not perfect consciences. The sacrifice in Hebrews 9:12, what does it say? Jesus' sacrifice was not with blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood. That's how he entered the most holy place, the true most holy place, the heavenly one, once for all time. And I would encourage you, just as you're thinking about this, that phrase once for all, and it's actually going to be in lesson 23, it's the title, once for all time. If we see that once for all, that tends to make us think all people. And the true meaning of that phrase is once for all time. And so once, he did it one time, and that was sufficient for all of eternity. Through that once for all time sacrifice, he obtained eternal redemption. So I think that's important to add to your comments about sacrifice in this section, that it obtained eternal redemption. Because all those sacrifices in the wilderness and at the temple, they did not. And then covenant, Hebrews 9, 19 through 20. This is a review of the old covenant. The Mosaic covenant was dedicated with blood. Moses took blood and sprinkled and declared what the covenant was. He said, "This is the blood of the covenant that God declared to you." So the whole Ten Commandments, all the law that was given, this was the ratifying, the dedication, putting it into action, I guess you could say. And then in the third movement, Hebrews 9, 23 through 10, 18, the sanctuary, Hebrews 9, 23 and 24, what do we have being talked about here? Earthly and then heavenly. The earthly sanctuary was a copy, and it had to be purified with the blood of goats. The heavenly things are for the true tabernacle, and it is purified with better things, Jesus' blood. And then we have a note that Christ entered the heavenly tabernacle, which was not made with hands, and he is in the presence of God for us. That's a lot. We're going to talk about it again in the lesson. So we're just, again, noting and bringing to our awareness that this topic is being brought up. Sacrifice, Hebrews 10, 11, and 12. Every human priest stands daily offering sacrifices which cannot take away sins, but Jesus offered one sacrifice for sins, which covered it forever, and he sat down. So it's really cool to me to have the difference physically. The human priests are standing every day, but Jesus did it, and he sat down, and he's done. The covenant, Hebrews 10, 16 and 17. This is the new covenant. God put his laws into our hearts. He writes them on our minds, and he doesn't remember our sins. So it's a brief summary of what the new covenant has for us. So what we're going to do now, next in our lesson, is talk about the earthly sanctuary and the heavenly sanctuary. And it's just always wonderful to think of heavenly things. How is the heavenly sanctuary described? I'm at the top of page 105. So again, according to Hebrews 8, 1 through 5, how is the heavenly sanctuary described? It says in verse 2, Jesus is a minister of this sanctuary. It also says in verse 2, it is the true tabernacle that the Lord erected. And in verse 5, this heavenly sanctuary is the pattern that was shown to Moses from which to make the earthly sanctuary. And that just blows my mind. How is the earthly sanctuary described, and how was it built? Verse 2 says it was built by man's hands. Verse 5, again, says it's a copy, a shadow of the true tabernacle. And Moses was divinely instructed in how to make it. What does Exodus 25, 3 through 9 tell you that the earthly sanctuary was made with, and what was its purpose? It was made with. I listed all these things because they're so pretty and interesting. Gold, silver, bronze, blue and purple and scarlet thread, fine linen, goat's hair, ram's skin dyed red, badger skins. And one of those rams or badgers, I think in some translations it even says dolphin skins, which I'm like, what? But it's hard. Badger skins makes more sense. Acacia wood. Israelites were to make it according to all that God showed Moses. And what was his purpose? It was to be the dwelling for God to dwell among the Israelites. A sanctuary, that word at its root actually means dwelling place. Does it sound like it would have been a very special sacred place? Sacred meaning holy. And yes, special, it sounds colorful, precious materials. It was a holy place, a place for the presence of God. Why is it hard to let go of something that has been meaningful to you, even when you recognize that there is something better in store? So just some thoughts. I mean, this is a discussion question, and I hope you get the application. We need to be able to let go of things. But change is hard, right? It's hard to let go of things that you know, that you're familiar with. It's hard to let go of things that you've had good experiences with and memories, things that are familiar. When something's new, it is unknown. There's uncertainty. Maybe you have to break it in. You have to get used to doing something different and learn new things so that we can, we should understand for everyone. And I'm kind of going off now from the question, but this would be a continued application of this thought, that when we are sharing the truth of the Lord with unbelievers, and it is going to prompt them to make changes in their lives, we should enter into the discussion knowing that this could bring about uncomfortability and uncertainty, and people are insecure with change when they don't know what's going to be happening. It is exciting and freeing, and there's so much wonderful stuff about the gospel that we're excited to share. So we emphasize and tell them how good it's going to be. But even with believers, when we are considering changes and what God wants to do and make changes in our lives, we get uncomfortable and maybe afraid. So this is just an opportunity to look at the change that God made in what he said and put into place, and it was all a copy and a shadow, and it was, as we're going to talk about a little bit later, the tutor, the instructor to help us have a, to help the Jews, the Israelites, have a preview of what Jesus would do for them. Let's remember that God has better things in store for us. That's a huge takeaway from this lesson to me. So now, in the middle of page 105, let's take a look at the biblical descriptions of the heavenly sanctuary and note what you learned from the following verses. So you can go around the group and call on ladies and just have them share what their answers were. From Exodus 24, 9 through 11, they went up a mountain, and Moses and the elders saw the God of Israel. What is described is not God. I mean, yes, God is being described, but note that they say under his feet. And that's all they tell us, is what was under the feet of God. So there is a reverence being shown to us in what they shared. Under his feet was something like, the language is communicating that they don't have the words, but it was like a paved work of sapphire stone. Your translation may have just said it was as a paved work of sapphire stone or lapis lazuli. It was clear. And it says they saw God and ate and drank. So they were in the presence of God. Isaiah 6, 1 through 4. Isaiah saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. The seraphim with six wings, which wings covered their face and their feet and made them fly. They were saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is filled with his glory." And the temple was filled with smoke. It's just wonderful to stop and pause and try to imagine, because those words give us the, we just try to imagine the visual image of what Isaiah might have seen. Daniel 7, 9 through 10. The Ancient of Days was seated on a throne. His garment was white as snow, the hair of his head like pure wool. I wondered if that meant that pure wool is something that's clean or very white, or is it combed out like wool threads? His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire, and wheels are mentioned in Ezekiel 1. So we don't look at Ezekiel 1 and the glory of God there, but there are similarities from this passage to the description in Ezekiel 1. A fiery stream issued forth from him, and 1,000 times 1,000 ministered to him, 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him, and books were opened. So there's a lot going on with that one in the heavenly sanctuary. And then Revelation 11:19, the temple of God was opened in heaven. The Ark of the Covenant was seen in his sanctuary. So where is the Ark of the Covenant right now? Well, there's one in heaven. And there were flashes of lightning, thunder, earthquake, and hail. And when I read that, I was like, oh, maybe that's where the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark got all that stuff that they show in that scene where the Ark of the Covenant was opened. Because when I watched that movie, I'm like, hey, it doesn't say that about that Ark of the Covenant. And they don't do it right. Because in the Old Testament, the Ark of the Covenant was supposed to be covered with a blue cloth, and nobody ever was supposed to see it. So it was not a public item to be viewed. Okay, back on page 105, my question after those verses is, which sanctuary is better, the earthly one or the heavenly one? Well, the heavenly one, right? If the earthly sanctuary required special sacrifices, which it did, then what type of sacrifices would the heavenly sanctuary require? I encourage you to have biblically based thoughts on this, and hopefully the verses that we've looked at and just what we've been reading in Hebrews will is prompting thoughts. But what type of sacrifices would the heavenly sanctuary require? I wrote very special, extraordinary sacrifices, holy, pure, perfect, heavenly sacrifices. And this question was good for me, just as I thought through, and when I wrote heavenly, I was like, okay, the earthly tabernacle required earthly special sacrifices. The heavenly tabernacle required heavenly sacrifices. Well, what is there? Only Jesus is the one who could be that heavenly sacrifice. Wow. So I'm turning the page to 106, and what we'll do now is talk about what Hebrews tells us. What did you highlight in Hebrews 8:6, describing the superiority of Jesus' priesthood? A more excellent ministry, a better covenant, and better promises. The good promise from God to Moses and the Israelites was that he would dwell among them and be their God. That's amazing and personal, but God made an even better promise. So that's a good summary transition statement to